Well, let's get started. Great to have you back on.
Yes, I'm pleased to be on again.
Let's get started with the situation in the Middle East. Recently, Antony Blinken's visit to Israel, he tries to intimidate Iran and other countries not to attack Israel. But it doesn't seem that he has anything to offer in order to calm the situation, the tensions that are going on right now in the Middle East. How do you find the foreign policy right now? What are they trying to do, in your opinion?
Well, who do you mean? The United States or Israel or the two of them together?
United States, first of all.
Well, it's difficult for the United States to ever do anything other than what Israel wants. They try to say that if you're a pro-Palestinian, it means you're a terrorist. So they try to intimidate them, possibly with being interrogated by the police and this sort of thing. So this makes it difficult for the Democrats and for Kamala. You have to remember, Kamala somehow got the nomination without ever getting a single vote. There was no primary. She didn't compete against other candidates. She wasn't selected. In the previous election, when she tried to be a Democrat candidate for the presidency, she had no support at all, completely none. And all of a sudden, she's the Democrat candidate for president, and the media is creating a false picture of how powerful a candidate she is, what a strong candidate. And their evidence is polls that are rigged. The way they rig the polls is they just don't include Republicans. They just interview Democrats, or they interview a majority of the interviewees are Democrats. So that's how they rig the polls to show she's leading. And what they're doing is creating the image for the public that she's a strong candidate, she's in the lead, and that way they can steal the election. They can't steal the election if she's way behind in the polls and so on. But if they can create this false image of what a strong candidate she is, then they can steal the election, which is what I expect them to do. So it may well be that Camilla and the Democrats are not really worried about the party being split because they're going to steal the election anyhow. The Republicans, of course, are completely under the control of Israel, as is Donald Trump. You know, the great, strong Trump, well, he's totally under Israel's thumb, and he'll do whatever they tell him to do. Israel, for a long time, has wanted to eliminate Iran because Iran finances Hezbollah. And Hezbollah has, in the past, prevented Israel from occupying southern Lebanon, which Israel wants to do. They want the water resources from the river in southern Lebanon, and they want the land. They want to further expand. And so far, they haven't been able to get the United States to take the lead in attacking Iran, although Washington continues to try to set Iran up. There are constant allegations about Iran. And when the assassination attempt was made on Trump, Washington was saying about, oh, the Iranians, the Iranians. So they were trying to get public support for an attack on Iran. So far, it hasn't happened. And I don't know what's going to happen in the Middle East. The Muslims don't seem to be prepared to do much. Hamas, of course, took on Israel, but And no one really has come to their aid. The Houthis in Yemen have shown some support by blocking sea lanes of traffic to Israel. None of the countries with military capability of doing anything, not even Iran. And Iran keeps announcing they're going to do something. Every time someone gets assassinated in Tehran, Iran says, we're going to teach them a lesson, but they never do anything. So it's unclear how the war is going to get underway. But we have seen, Nima, again, more American forces being sent into that area. So we saw that initially when the Israelis attacked Gaza. And now we're seeing a beefing up of those forces. So what does it mean? I don't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe it's just intimidation. Maybe it's just trying to make sure Iran doesn't attack in retaliation for the assassinations. I can't say. But of course, given the lack of any independence in American foreign policy in the Middle East, because it's determined by Israel, there's always a chance for that to blow up in a big way. Now, there are other obstacles that the United States has to face, and even Israel. The Russians, the Kremlin, said that Iran is important to Russia, and they will not tolerate an attack on Iran. Well, the question is whether Washington will believe what Putin said, because he said so many times there's going to be consequences, and there never are any. And now we've had a NATO army invade Russia herself in the Kursk region. And again, he says, we're going to get you, but nothing has happened. So it may well be that Putin's statement that he won't tolerate an attack on Iran will be disregarded and have no effect in protecting Iran from an American-Israeli attack. I've always wondered why China, Russia, and Iran have not made a mutual defense pact and announced it publicly. If the leaders of those three countries stood up and said, we've agreed to a mutual defense pact, an attack on one's attack on all, I think that would be the end of it. Because not even the insane people in the Zionist government in Israel could possibly think Israel can and the United States can take on Russia and China and Iran at the same time. It's just not conceivable. But this has not happened. So it makes you wonder why? Because it would put an end to all of this drama and all this ongoing, what's going to happen. It would prevent the outbreak of the war, which looks like eventually will take place. So I don't know what to make of that. I don't know how to understand the non-response of three very powerful countries who have a mutual interest in stopping all of this aggression: China, Russia, and Iran. They're not themselves being aggressive, and yet they do nothing to stop it. Well, a pact, a mutual security pact, would stop it. But it doesn't happen. So now we have a further widening of the Ukrainian war with this NATO. It's a NATO invasion of Russia. The officers are NATO. Some of the troops are. Some of them are French. Some of them are Polish. They're probably Americans there, but certainly in the officer ranks. All of the equipment used is Western, mainly American. Well, the Ukrainians don't know how to use most of it, so it takes American operators. It takes American intelligence, satellites, all of this for that to happen. So we now have a situation where NATO invaded Russia. Why? Because there's no chance of any invasion like that succeeding, and this one certainly hasn't. It's largely, I think, destroyed. But what's the purpose of it? And why does Putin let this war in Ukraine just drag on and on and on? He keeps pretending. Here we have a situation where Mother Russia herself has been attacked, and Putin still pretends he's fighting a limited military operation in Donbas. This makes no sense. It's a denial of reality. It's almost like the Russian leader cannot accept reality. It makes no sense. So I don't know what to say about it. But so far, my prediction for several years has been that the unwillingness of the Kremlin to use sufficient force to quickly end the conflict in Ukraine means for certain, without any doubt, that the war will continue to widen. And it has. It's continued to widen. Every weapon system that the United States said they would never give to Ukraine, they have given. And now they have participated in an invasion of Russia proper, the Russian Federation, not the parts of Ukraine that have elected to rejoin Russia that Russia is occupying. So, and still nothing happens. Just more warnings that mean nothing, more threats that are never acted on. So I think if the Ukrainians and NATO are capable of it, they'll mount another attack. At some point, it becomes embarrassing for the Kremlin. And whether they want to or not, at some point, they'll have to do something. So this is leading to nuclear war. And another thing I would say, and I know I'm probably preempting all the questions you had in mind about Russia and Ukraine, but the two things are so much intertwined. Well, I'll stop. You go ahead and ask some questions.
Let's get back to the conflict in the Middle East. Do you think that the way that the United States has been dealing with Houthis, we know that they're limited to control Houthis and how they can fight Iranians in that region? When it comes, there has to be some sort of analysis on their part that it's not possible to do an operation in that scale. That's why there has to be something in Washington saying to Netanyahu and his administration, we're limited to help you, and you have to find a solution for the situation that you're dealing with right now. But it doesn't seem that would be the case for Washington.
No, they don't think they're limited. You know, the neoconservative foreign policy is based on American hegemony. So we're the most powerful country. And so we can do whatever we want. And not only that, we can nuke them. So I don't think there's any thinking. You know, a number of the top-ranked medical scientists have said that one of the consequences of the COVID vaccine, which everybody almost had, is impairment of the cognitive function. People simply can't think. They can't think anymore. And they I mean, it doesn't affect everybody who gets the shot, or at least so far hasn't, but it affects a large enough percentage that the ability of people to think, to comprehend, to use cognitive facilities has declined. And this may be a problem in Washington. It may simply be they don't realize they can't take on Russia and China and Iran at the same time, or even individually. If you think about it, when's the last time the United States won a war? The Spanish-American War, 1898. We like to think we won World War II, but everybody knows the Russians won that. We didn't even get into the war until Germany was broken. So, and we lost the Vietnam War, we lost in Afghanistan, we destroyed Iraq, they don't pay any attention to us now. We just don't win wars, even against what we regard as backward countries. So I don't know what they're thinking, but certainly not peace. There's no sign that anyone in Washington is thinking peace anywhere. It's all just more aggression, push harder, more insults. So it has to end up in a bad way.
One of the things that is happening right now in the Middle East is the way that Saudi Arabia has stopped this petrodollar and this contract they had with the United States. And the way that they're going toward BRICS, do you think that if Trump wins, he can get a political settlement for the conflict in the Middle East in favor of Israel?
Well, it depends on whether Iran and Russia let him. And whether they will or not, I don't know. They might, just to get rid of the difficulty. But you see, as I've said before on this program, Trump does not have the support of the American establishment. So it'd be hard for him to form a government with people who know what they're doing, or people who would actually put themselves at risk for his policies. Most people want presidential appointments to serve their own careers, not to serve the president. And I think that Trump, as we saw in his first term, is very weak in office because the establishment doesn't support him, and he hasn't the personnel that it takes to actually change things or implement policies. They just ignore you. If you don't have those people, there's nothing you can do. So I'm not very much a believer that Trump can actually change things. It would take a big movement. It would have to be a big political movement. It takes years to create something like that, and to produce enough leaders, committed people, that would create a government that could actually change something. It takes a revolutionary type situation, and those elements are not present. Trump has a lot of supporters, but it's not a serious intellectual thing. The agenda is limited. What is the agenda is to stop the Democrats, it's not like the rise of the Nazis or the rise of the Communist parties. These were committed agendas with large numbers of people, and the opponents were weak. But the American establishment is pretty much rooted in, and they're strong, and the Trump forces are weak. And furthermore, I don't think Trump will be allowed to win unless he makes an agreement that he's not going to do anything. If they believe that he can't really change anything, and they can block him or they can get him to agree not to try, they won't be concerned about him. And of course, if he doesn't do anything, he'll lose his supporters. So that's one way of getting rid of him, of getting rid of the threat of an outsider. I've always thought the American people have to support Trump, because otherwise there'll never again be anyone who says, I represent the people, not the establishment. Everybody will know you have to represent the establishment or you can't get in the office. Trump is in a very important sense the last hope the United States has, because if he's blocked, if the people don't vote for him or they can steal the election from him, no one else will ever again come out against the establishment and claim he's going to give power back to the people or that he's going to normalize relations with Russia. No one would ever say anything like that again, because they'll say, remember what happened to Trump. And nobody supported him. So that's the crisis for the United States. I kind of think they'll steal the election, and essentially it means the end of the Republican Party and the end of the United States. There'll be some other country here, but it won't be the United States. The Constitution will have no authority. The law will be used to suppress dissenters. And the Democratic prosecutors and so-called Department of Justice, I mean, what a joke, Department of Justice, they'll just start arresting Republicans. And then everybody else will decide to be a Democrat, and there'll be a one-party state. I think this is the likely outcome of all of this. And I think that the unwillingness of Russia, China, and Iran to form up a very strong alliance that makes it clear that all of this aggression has no more room to run. If that doesn't happen, then there'll be an American police state and there'll be nuclear war. And that's my real concern. And I think that's where things are headed.
Yeah. We have Modi right now in Ukraine trying to talk with Zelensky. Here is what he has said in this.
1.4 billion people of India, and their sentiments are inspired by humanity. So coming to the land of Ukraine, I have come with the message of peace. Your Excellency, a few days ago, I hosted the third Voice of Global South Summit, in which 120 countries participated. So on behalf of those countries of Global South as well, I have come with the message of peace. Your Excellency, you will understand and are aware that as far as the peace is concerned, India has made its proactive contribution towards that.
He's trying to say that we are supporting peace, we are in favor of political settlement, but do you think that he has any sort of permission on the part of Putin to talk about this, or he has talked with Washington, or he's doing his own, because he feels that he has to talk this way, he has to go there and talk with Zelensky?
You know, it just shows the weakness So Zelensky is no longer the president. His term's expired. Zelensky's term is expired. He refused to hold an election. So he's called president. He's unelected. So what legitimacy does he have? American support. Do you call Zelensky your excellency, as Modi did? I mean, that's absurd. You would say, you war criminal son of a bitch. That's what you would say. So I just see it as a more jabbering talk. It's meaningless. How is Modi going to talk Zelensky into doing something when the Americans are in total control? Modi should go to Washington and talk. What is he talking to Zelensky for? What can Zelensky do? If Zelensky does something, Washington won't. All of a sudden, no money, no arms, no ammunition, no diplomatic support. He's gone. So, you know, it's nonsense. It's just, or it's India now trying to show their important country and they're on the world scene, and our leader can muck around in Western relations. And now an Indian leader has to go help resolve American Western problems. I mean, that's all that is. It's not anything real. It's not possible that Modi is going to talk any kind of sense into the Ukrainian dictator, who is totally under Washington's control. It's just, all of this is distraction. It's just more distraction. So nobody really pays any attention to what's actually going on.
And the other thing would be the way Washington has reacted to allegations coming from Russia, because Russia said Washington is behind this attack on the Kursk region. And because without the United States helping Ukrainians or whoever is this army that has attacked the Kursk region, they didn't have any sort of mental or physical ability to do that. Right, on the other hand, you see the rhetoric coming out of Washington. I'm going to play a clip how they respond.
We're continuing to have the discussions with Ukrainians in terms of their focus. You heard President Zelensky say it was to create a buffer zone. So we're having those conversations to learn more about what their objectives are. Again, if you take a step back from a U.S. perspective, our focus continues to be enabling Ukraine to be a free and sovereign country that can deter Russian aggression in the future. And so that continues to be our focus. As it relates to their operation in Kursk, as I mentioned, they clearly have compelled the Russians to struggle in their response. It has certainly demonstrated the creativity and the battlefield prowess of the Ukrainians. But when it comes to what their longer term objectives are here, that's something that we're still discussing.
That's total bullshit. I don't know who that idiot is, but he's either completely stupid or he's lying through his teeth. This was an American operation. Everybody knows that. I've already said it. You can't have all that American equipment there and all the satellite and information and planning, and Ukraine can't do that. So it's an American operation. Why they did it, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to provoke Putin into using tactical nuclear weapons. You see, my recent article, I pointed out that Putin went to war in Ukraine before he was militarily prepared. And then he had to rely initially on a semi-private military force called the Wagner Group, because he just didn't have any soldiers. And he had wasted at least 8 years while we built the Ukrainian army. He didn't build a Russian one. So he's sitting there on his butt doing nothing, and then all of a sudden decides to go to war, and he got any soldiers. And now he's always saying, there's no conscription, no conscription, no conscription, no Russian conscription, just volunteers. And so there's no big Russian army. See, what the West should be facing is a 4 or 5 million highly trained Russian army, armed to the teeth with all the fabulous weapon systems they have. That would sober up NATO very quickly. It would sober up Washington and stupid officers like the one you just showed. They would say, oh, I see. Well, he didn't do that. And so what the Russians are relying on, as they now have made completely clear, is nuclear weapons. They've just completed an exercise or war game, whatever you want to call it, in which they practice destroying the complete military capability of NATO in a first strike with tactical nuclear weapons, because they haven't got a conventional army big enough. So they're relying on nukes, and they have adjusted their war doctrine such that there's a lower threshold for using tactical nuclear weapons. And so what Putin is doing is saying, okay, if this continues, our response isn't conventional. Well, of course, there'll be nothing left of Europe, I mean, or our fleets anywhere. So the situation, I think, is the one I warned of years ago, in February of 2022, that this war has to be quickly won. You cannot go in there and play like it's a limited police action when you are at war with NATO. This whole war is due to NATO. It was the United States that overthrew the Ukrainian government, set up the neo-Nazi puppet, trained the army, sicked them on Donbass. Russia was forced into responding. And all the time, Putin had done nothing to build the military because he was relying on diplomacy. Diplomacy. Our partners, our partners. He didn't have any partners. What was he talking about? He had enemies. So what you see here is the interaction of inability to face the reality of aggression. The inability to recognize aggression. He's still fighting a limited military operation in Donbass when the United States invades Russia. Well, you got to expect more provocations. Do you think, as far as the West has gone, getting involved in this, that they're going to quit now? Why are they going to quit? What's been the consequence to the West of this? Nothing. No consequence. So,
actually, we have consequences in Germany. The German economy is just going down.
No, that's because of the Nord Stream pipeline. And the Germans are so scared and intimidated, they won't even say the Americans did it. Now they're pretending the Ukrainians did it. Well, how did the Ukrainians do it? Particularly with the United States has the whole world under constant surveillance. Satellites there, and somehow the Ukrainians did it and we didn't know. I mean, first of all, the Ukrainians haven't got the ability to reach the pipeline. Or the audacity. So,
do you think that the United States was successful in separating Germany from Russia forever?
I don't know forever, but certainly in the short run, temporarily, forever, who knows? Someday the German people might wake up and come to their senses and realize that their government represents Washington, not them. Well, maybe they'll never wake up. You know, the German people have been brainwashed daily since 1945. And they're full of guilt and they don't have any confidence. The Americans distorted it. We took over the education system. And so we did to them. Say that what happened to the Germans, the destruction of German self-belief and confidence, we're now doing to ourselves with critical race theory and all this woke stuff that they now teach the kids in school. They teach all the white kids that they're racist and that their parents are racist and they're born in the wrong bodies and all this stuff. So they're destroying the confidence of the American children. That's what we did to the Germans. We took over the education system and told them how evil they were and all that. And it's so far now, you can't ever use a Nazi symbol in Germany. They put you in prison. So,
in your opinion, does Washington consider any sort of future with Russia in terms of the relationship between Washington and Russia? Because the way that they're supporting Ukraine, it seems that for them, there is no tomorrow in the relationship with Russia.
Well, how can there be a relationship between the United States and Russia when the principal goal of United States foreign policy is to prevent the rise of any power that can serve as a constraint on American unilateralism? So clearly, Russia is one of those powers. So that explains all of the hostility toward Russia. Who is the other one? China. That explains all the hostility toward China. Even Trump, you see. Trump, who was going to normalize relations with Russia, very quickly jumped on China. So what did China do? Nothing. What's Russia done? Nothing except ask for a mutual security understanding with the West. They asked to join NATO. The Russians have been trying to be part of the West. And they keep getting the cold shoulder. They haven't done anything. They're not responsible. Neither country is responsible for these conflicts. The Russians didn't go into Ukraine and overthrow the government and set up a Russian puppet and start picking on Germany. They didn't do anything like that. It was us. All of this, we started intentionally. Why overthrow a democratically elected Ukrainian government? Because it was friendly to Russia. Why? Because the Ukraine's been part of Russia for 300, 400, 500 years and longer. You know, Kiev was one of the centers of the formation of the Russian state. So why did we go in there and overthrow them? Stick in a puppet, start all this conflict against the Donbass Russians who broke away because they were being persecuted. Why did we build an army for 8 years that could suppress the Donbass republics and massacre the Russian population. We did all of this because it's directed against Russia. And the whole time, Russia did nothing. They just let us do this. Well, why? Why did they let us? They could have stopped it cold. So, you know, I find these discussions almost pointless. And I just see it as a unreality, as an inability to accept reality. I don't think Putin can accept reality. I don't think the Kremlin can accept reality. I don't even think the Chinese can. I think both of them are sitting on Iran telling them, don't do anything, don't do anything. And so they can't learn from their own mistakes of not doing anything. See, the Russians not doing anything is why they have just been invaded by a NATO army. It's why the whole Ukrainian conflict is there, because the Russians wouldn't do anything. The Chinese have done nothing. They talk, but they don't do anything. Now they're sitting on Iran. Iran can't do anything. So what's going to happen? Iran's going to get more provocations. Israel's going to assassinate some more people in Tehran. They're going to bomb some more places in Iran. So that's, it seems to me, completely clear. And all this about peace, peace talk, negotiations, it's bullshit. It's total bullshit. You have to be crazy, stupid, insane to get caught up in all of that. You can see clearly what's happening. Why did we invade Kursk? There's no strategic reason. There's no possibility of it going anywhere. Why do we do it? We're sticking our thumb in Putin's eye. Here, take this. And he does nothing again. So they're establishing that Russia's a paper tiger. I mean, Russia's established it itself. The fact that it's now, we're going on 3 years and they haven't defeated a third world army that has to be supplied from outside. The Russians could easily block any inflow of any of that material. But we're not invading Iran. We're not invading Ukraine. We're not invading Ukraine. They've done nothing to stop Ukraine from being able to fight the war. Nothing whatsoever to stop Ukraine. Kiev is there. The government functions. What's the first thing we do when we attack a Middle Eastern country? We attack the government, kill all the officials. I think it's just going to get worse. And look at Israel now. Look what's been going on in Gaza since what, last October? October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. Almost a year, the Israelis have been slaughtering women and children and starving them to death and everything else, and nobody's done a damn thing about it. So what does that tell you? The world will accept anything, any atrocity, and because nobody will do anything about it. I mean, Israel's a tiny little place. It's a tiny little place. It's easy to just completely destroy the place. It's tiny. Nothing happens.
Paul, it seems that as a voter in the United States right now, you have two kind of mindset. You go Democrat and fighting Russia, and you go Republican and fighting China. Is there any sort of other type of thinking, the way that let's get along with these superpowers? No, they're superpowers.
No. And you can see it in the foreign policy discussion. You can see it among the so-called Russian experts. It's all Russia's evil, we can win. No, there's no, and the people who do speak against it, they get pulled off of airplanes. Their passports are confiscated. Their homes are invaded. They take the computers and their cell phones. Or even Tulsi Gabbard, a former U.S. Congresswoman. She was a campaign. She campaigned for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020, and just completely defeated Kamala Harris. She didn't win it, but she knocked Harris right out of the race the first round. Well, now every time she flies, she gets harassed. She's endlessly searched. She misses flights because they're searching and researching, and she's constantly harassed. And it's been in the news. And so if you say anything and you have any kind of public exposure, they get you. So how are you going to talk about peace? And who's going to support you? You see, all of these Russian experts are supported by the military security complex. That's where the research grants come from, their professorships, their think tanks. How can they say, oh, we don't want war? Then all the people supporting them say, well, you're cutting into our profits. Why are we supporting you? You just have to be realistic about how things work, Nima. There's in the United States today, there's no place for any idealism. It doesn't exist. It's just money. Money can buy anything. And the people who want peace haven't got any money, and they're not spending it to buy think tanks and Russian experts. And in fact,
I don't know if you heard about Scott Ritter. Did you hear about Scott Ritter?
About Scott who? Ritter. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I said he's pulled off an airplane. They steal his passport. They invade his house. They carry off his things. He was going to Russia to participate in a conference. No, we're not going to allow you to talk to Russians. That means you're a terrorist. So now he's under surveillance by the FBI. And so is Tulsi Gabbard. Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard, same. All kinds of people has happened to. I've written about a number of them. The last example, just the other day, is an Englishman who lives in California. And he got yanked, arrested in Heathrow Airport, London, and sent to jail. This took him to jail. He hadn't done anything except express a view. I think it was the view critical of Israel. And so the fact that he expressed a view critical of Israel meant he had taken sides with Hamas, and that was now a criminal offense. People need to understand what's going on, but they don't. Because then it hadn't affected them yet. Or they think, oh, it's some aberration. Or they'll fix that. Or it's just hadn't gotten widespread enough. But by the time, see, they're feeling their way. By the time it gets widespread, it's too late to do anything. And so, yeah, I don't think any possibility. The only way there's any possibility for negotiating an end to anything is if Russia gives in to America, Iran gives in to Israel. And gives in, accepts the Israel case. If Russia accepts the American case. But there's no room for any compromise. None of that. It's not going to happen. And so the inability of Russia, China, and Iran to act means it's going to get worse. It's leading to a major war where the only possible outcome is nuclear war. That's where we're headed.
Actually, recently Medvedev was talking about, he said that maybe the only solution to what's going on right now in the Middle East is a big war.
Well, whether it's a solution or not, it's what's going to happen, because the countries capable of stopping it are incapable of acting. They just won't act. Look, I mean, why didn't you think about Iran? Why is Iran, why don't they have a fully functioning Russian S-400 air defense system? If Iran had that, there's no possibility of any Israeli or American missile or airplane entering the airspace. Can't be done. They don't have it. Why? If they had it, you can't attack them. The same in Syria. Look, the Israelis continue attacking Syria. They attack. Now, allegedly, Syria has the Russian S-300. Completely adequate to blow every Israeli plane out of the sky. Even ones in Israel. The Russians won't let them use it. So they get attacked. And just think of all the Iranians that were assassinated in Syria, because the Russians won't let them use the air defense system. So, if there's, in other words, what I'm saying is, if there's no countervailing power, what stops the U.S. and Israel? Now, there are countervailing powers, but they won't act, and so they may as well not be there. The Russians have done absolutely nothing in response to all the red lines we've crossed. Despite warnings, nothing has happened. And still to this day, Putin hasn't got a big enough army to deal with NATO on a conventional basis. And so the whole Russian response is tactical nuclear weapons. They just tested it out. They've changed their war doctrine. There's a low threshold now for using them. So Russian defense is, here come the nukes. Yeah. Well, how many American or NATO invasions of Russia is it going to take? That's the question. See, there's no earthly military reason for the invasion into the Kursk territory. None. And like that American general talking about the Ukrainians are building a buffer zone. Well, that buffer zone might last a couple of weeks, but it's not going to be there very long. So the whole thing is nonsense. Everything that American officer you played said is nonsense. It's just total nonsense. You would think anybody can see it. And there he's talking like this is serious. It's just garbage. It's just, and people sit there and take notes and, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's just crazy talk. I mean, I think the Russians have already destroyed all the weapon systems that were part of that Kursk invasion, intrusion. I think most of the troops have been destroyed or surrounded and cut off. It's a stupid why'd they do it? Just to prove that they can, and the Russians won't do anything. So I, you know, it's very difficult to be hopeful that there could be a rational, sane solution, because why did it ever start? Why did the United States overthrow the government of Ukraine? Why? Why? In order to start all this trouble. There's no other reason. Ukraine was doing nothing to us. They did decide against taking our side on some issue that would have been against the Russians. I forget now what it was all about. Maybe something about the orientation of their trade. But it was so tied in already with Russia, because they've been part of Russia forever, that it made no sense for them. So I think we use something like that as an excuse. But you wouldn't overthrow a country just because they didn't accept some trade deal. So we overthrew them with an intent. And had nothing to do with making them free, democratic, and all that crap. They clearly aren't. They've got an unelected leader. They used to have a democratically elected government. Now they got an unelected leader. And a whole bunch of Nazis running around. So I think that we could get people to talk clearly about what really is going on, that might help. But nobody does. It's all, they have constructed an artificial reality. They've made up a story out of lies, and everybody lives in this lie world. And so there's no room for any truth or any real. Anything real. It's just fabricated narratives. And everybody, that's where they are. They can't recognize truth. They can't recognize reality. And I think that Putin has contributed to this by letting it go on and on and on. And fostering it, all that talk, all those years, our partners. What was he talking about? He didn't have any partners.
It seems that we're getting to the point that they're totally understanding it.
Yeah, he and Lavrov all the time, our Western partners, our American partners, they didn't have any partners, they had enemies, people working against them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm repeating myself, and I'm going on too long. I'm repeating myself, and
it's always a pleasure, Paul, to talk with you. Great pleasure as always. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, Nima. All the best to you.
Have a great time. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.